few moments, via shortwave radio, we will attempt to contact some of the American radio reporters, which NBC has stationed in every important sea capital. We turn first to South America, to reporter Everett A. Bauman in Buenos Aires.
Screeching sirens from the plants of downtown newspapers broke the news to this capital at mid-afternoon yesterday that Japan had attacked the United States in the Pacific. The city's atmosphere was already tense since early morning because of the important elections being staged in Buenos Aires province. And the first reaction of most Argentines upon hearing the ominous wail reserved for news of supreme importance with fear that an armed uprising had been provoked by the bitterly contested Poland. I watched the incredulous expressions on the faces of many citizens as they read instead on the newspaper bulletin board that Japanese planes were dropping bombs on Pearl Harbor. And I heard one old man muttering over and over to himself as he read, but the Japanese must be crazy. At an early hour this morning, silent knots of people, still seeming stunned, stood in front of the newspaper office, while special policemen called out for the election remained on duty in the streets throughout the night. The shock that the attack brought here is explained by the lack of seriousness that the public has attached to the Far Eastern crisis. Only yesterday morning, La Prensa ran a leading article that began, quote, "There are good reasons to believe that Japan will avoid a war with the United States," end quote. And during the week, newspapers pushed the Jerusalem Washington Corp to inside pages in favor of war developments in Libya and Russia. The official reaction here was also one of great surprise, tempered with the traditional Argentine reserve. Interviewed by newsmen, acting President Castillo declared yesterday that he could not comment on news of such exceeding importance until officially informed. He pointed out, however, that Argentine foreign policy was one of unswerving neutrality. But later in the evening, Dr. Ruiz Guignardou, the Argentine foreign minister, after lengthy conferences with Norman Harmer, the American ambassador, declared that Argentina would not define its position until the United States had defined theirs. This was interpreted by diplomats here to mean that if the United States, by a ringing declaration of war, ran with Japan as the aggressor, that Argentina may not issue another retaliation decree, but will instead re-examine its position in the light of Pan-American declarations of continental solidarity against foreign aggression. The lead to such action has already come from Uruguay, where President Baldomir declared yesterday afternoon that in the face of undeniable Japanese aggression, Uruguay could not remain neutral and would open base facilities to the United States. Observers most familiar with Argentine policy commented here last night, however, that the biggest factor affecting the Argentine decision will be other international recovery repercussions to the Japanese attack, such as a possible German declaration of war on the United States as an ally of Japan. This is Everett A. Bauman speaking to Buenos Aires. I return you now to New York.
We turn next to the Panama Canal Zone, which now is undergoing a total blackout. Here is Pete Brennan speaking direct from Panama City.
Hello, NBC. This is Pete Brennan from Panama City. It's a steaming hot night, and today's excitement hasn't helped us cool it off down here. Every home in the canal zone, every Army and Navy garrison and base, completely dark, and has been since 7 o'clock. The civilian men and women who operate the canal, they come from every state in the Union, are sitting in the streams around us of their homes and wondering what tomorrow and tomorrow's tomorrow may bring them. they are not afraid. They place their faith in the future. The army garrisons along the banks of the canal. Then the Navy forces afloat on a shore here. So on every listening place to the young conquered hunter, the armed forces of Uncle Sam are grimly alert. Occasionally searchlights sweep the waters of Panama Bay, the Pacific entrance to the canal. At military headquarters, there will be no peace tonight for the men in command. Although any attack on the canal seems remote at the moment, their program calls for complete seizing vigilance. Above all, they watch for any surprise maneuver by Japan. Meanwhile, Panama City is 2 feet right by contrast to the neighboring towns of Balboa and Anton on the Pacific side of the ocean. It is deemed best to keep lights on as usual in the capital of the Republic. Thus, the doctor pulled to the port and a 300 or more Japanese to release it, and whose arrest was ordered to carry. Theaters, balloons, and beer gardens were open for business as usual, and thousands of Panamanians and a number of Americans gathered in the public places in Panama City to discuss the war. Panama, in its roundup of the Japanese, and also of several Germans suspected as active citizens, unquestionably proved its loyalty to a good friend, the United States, today by acting immediately. Plans have been made by Japan to evacuate their national to revive them. The ship was not due until late this month. So, instead of sailing for the homeland, a somewhat curious collection of barbers, fishermen, and sky merchants, many of them believed to be ranking officers of the Japanese Navy, are to be turned over to the United States for internment in the canal zone. Panama also placed the Axis legations under surveillance. This little republic thus proclaimed to the world that any attack on the United States by a non-American power is likewise an attack on Panama. When the news of Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor was flashed today, military phones and short patrols immediately rounded up all Army and Navy personnel and all bearing phones in our centers. Simultaneously, Army airplanes and both sides of the ocean took to the air in large numbers and remained up and set off to go. After the dark day of work activity, what looked like the skies were clear, they were waning moon. There was great activity at the quarantine station late tonight as the Japanese rounded up by Panama were collected. Some merchant ships, which were scheduled to leave canal zone first today, will be gone. Although the canal zone generally was dark, the locks were brightly lit and under added guard. Automobiles were allowed to travel through the canal zone with lights unless a warning siren was blown.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Pete Brennan speaking directly from Panama City, Panama Canal Zone. Our news roundup continues as we again switch to South America. Go ahead, Rio de Janeiro.
This is Rio de Janeiro speaking. Brazil received the news today by the Japanese. Do you believe the press report? The news is spread over the city, empty like wildfire. Large crowds collected around, the loud speakers set up throughout the city, and all of the radio stations broadcasting the news. The consensus of opinion gathered in the cosmopolitan city of Rio de Janeiro is that the United States is ample able to defend herself against Japan and not rooting for Uncle Sam. Official Brazil hasn't yet been heard from. United States Ambassador Jefferson Carpery officially notified Vargas Japan had declared war on the United States after launching an unprovoked attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. Later, Mr. Carpery and the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senor Oswaldo Araña, held a long conference, but Carpery declined to state what had been discussed. It is believed here that Brazil will not issue any formal statement until the United States officially declares war on Japan. However, we have informed the recent statement of Senor Araña that if any American nation was attacked, Brazil would not remain neutral. Whether or not this statement is to be backed is to be seen, and tomorrow will tell. But we all believe that Brazil will back up the United States. Will the Latin American Council call a meeting of their Secretary of State? This is a question that is being asked here tonight. The apparent answer is no. The Havana Pan-American Pact fully covers the present situation. Will German elements seize this opportunity to create confusion in this country to embarrass the United States? That's possible and probable. There are 1 million Germans and descendants in Brazil, are under the Nazi stand, and where is the mine? As was recently declared by the chief of police of Porto Alegre and Rio Grande do Sul, there are 3 million Italians and descendants. There are 260,000 Jews. Will Germany get them together, brought with the help of the Franco-Spanish elements, let's put it in this country? That is to be seen. Who knows? And now, I wish you good night. I'll return you to the National Broadcasting Company.
News now from another of our neighbor nations to the south. For Mexico's reaction to the situation in the Pacific, we take you now direct to Mexico City.
Hello, NBC New York. There is no report from Mexico City at this time. We send you now to New York.
From the NBC newsroom in New York, across our nation and the broad Pacific, we go now to Bert Silen in Manila in the Philippine Islands.
Hello, NBC. This is Bert Silen speaking from Manila. It is now approximately 1:12 p.m. at December the 8th in the Philippines. Since 4 o'clock this morning, when we first received word of the bombing of the Hawaiian Islands by the Japanese, we have been on the go, checking and rechecking reports and events which have happened not only in the Philippines, but in the Far East. I don't know just what reports have been broadcast in the United States, but here are the facts as we have them up to this time. It has now been officially confirmed that the city of Davao in Mindanao and part of the Japanese settlement in the Philippines was bombed at 8 o'clock this morning by 13 Japanese planes. One of the Bureau Post radio stations in Davao was completely demolished, and several lives were lost. Some estimate the figure as high as 50. It was also reported by Army officials that the city of Apari on the northern tip of Luzon in the Philippines was under bombardment during quite a portion of the morning. Also, it has been officially confirmed that Clark Field, the largest concentration of Air Force in the Philippines, was visited by Japanese bombers a few hours ago. No direct hits were reported and no casualties. We reported earlier this morning that the Sarah Pan American Airways base at Guam had been bombed, but the extent of the damage has only been now confirmed. We understand that not only was the air base bombed, but machine guns as well. And at the present time, huge oil fires and gasoline fires are raging in Guam. It was also reported that an unidentified submarine sank an American transport somewhere between 1,600 and 2,000 miles out of Manila. This has not been confirmed by either the Navy or Army Department. A careful checkup indicates that if this report is true, it must be either the old American President liner, President Pierce, which is now the transport General Hugh L. Scott, or the American President liner, Cooley. Neither Navy intelligence or Army officials have heard anything of this proposed sinking. Officially, it has been reported that the SS President Harrison, engaged in evacuating American Marines from Shanghai, was sunk or captured by Japanese in the Yangtze River, just out of Shanghai. The Marines have been interned by the Japanese. The British gunboat Petrel was officially reported sunk in the Hongfu River, and the U.S. gunboat Wake was seized by the Japanese near Shanghai. The Philippine Army is out in full force throughout Manila, and all points of importance are being guarded by squads of soldiers. Machine guns have been planted on the tall building in downtown Manila. The studios from which I am now talking are closely guarded, as well as the transmitting stations and other points of communication. All telephone communications have been cut out temporarily, due no doubt to Army orders, and there is no way of knowing how soon it will be put back into service. All banks in Manila are open and doing their best to accommodate the rush of depositors trying to obtain cash for the coming evacuation. The Escolta, main business street of Manila, to be full of activity, although little business is actually being done. Policemen and soldiers are everywhere, directing traffic and looking for attempts at sabotage or pillage. All the Japanese residents of Manila have been rounded up and are now in a concentration camp. Incidentally, Manila has not yet been bombed. I repeat that, Manila has not yet been bombed. We have picked up several reports from various radio stations throughout the world indicating that Manila has already been bombed. This is not true, as Manila has not yet been bombed. Camp Ord, 100 miles north of Manila, which is one of the largest training schools and quite near Clark Field, has been bombed, and the number of casualties has not yet been reported. Camp John Hay in Baguio has been bombed at 10 o'clock this morning, and 7 were reported killed. It was originally thought that the city of Baguio would be a safe haven for refugees from the danger zones of Manila. But this bombing of Camp John Hay has changed the plans of the American Red Cross and the evacuation committee, and it is now believed that a new site, which has already been prepared, will be used for the evacuation of men, women, and children from the danger areas. A Japanese aircraft carrier has been sighted off the Bay of Davao. This, no doubt, was the carrier from which the bombers flew over Davao this morning and wrecked the Bureau Force radio station. The Pan American Clipper that left here yesterday for Hong Kong was bombed while lying in the airport. All passengers and crew are reported safe, as no one was on board when the attack came. This makes it official, the news that Hong Kong has already been bombed. We have also received news unofficially that Singapore is now under attack. Japanese troops have already landed in North Borneo, but from information that we have, it seems that they have been repelled by British troops there. Of course, you all know that the Dutch East Indies have declared war against Japan, and it will not be long now, we expect, before there will be some order out of the chaos which seems to be prevalent in the Far East today. It appears that the Japanese forces are striking everywhere at one time, apparently not in great force, but harassing troops, navy, and air fleet in order to keep the strength scattered. We have no more news at present, so we will turn you back to the NBC.
Thank you, Manila. Back in the NBC newsroom in New York. And now, ladies and gentlemen, some editorial comments from the leading newspapers of the United States. The New York Times. There is only one possible answer to Japan's attack. That answer is an immediate declaration of war by the United States against Japan. This is so clear and so inescapable that Congress can be relied upon to act with all possible speed and to give its answer with that unanimity which will speak for a united nation. The real battle of our times will not be fought in the Far East. It will be fought on the English Channel. We can count on our government to recognize this fact. We can count on it to plan a strategy of war which takes account of the imperative necessity of maintaining an uninterrupted flow of strength to the main battlefield in Europe. The New York Times. That was that editorial comment from the New York Times. Now the New York Daily News. When you are attacked, there is nothing to do but fight. When a nation gets into war, the way to fight it is to fight to the hilt with the war. Bad enough to get into a war, any war, but it's infinitely worse to lose it once you're in. The time has come for all of us to stand by the president in the general aim of winning the war, while reserving the right, as the British people and Watergate, of criticizing government methods of all kinds pertaining to the war effort. The Chicago Tribune. The United States is now at war, and we have but one task ahead, to strike with all we have. The Tribune has consistently been opposed to the administration's foreign policy in the past. The New York Herald Tribune. The attack itself, an act of naked aggression committed while Japanese envoys were actually in discussion with our State Department, and the President's message laid before the Emperor, came as a dismaying shock. We know that we state no more than the simple truth when we declare that this war against our enemies, wherever they may be, will be fought to a victorious end, with the last energy, the last resource, and the last ounce of determination of every American man and woman. The Chicago Daily News. Today the United States sits in sorrow. We write of deep faith that all we've tried in every week. Thanks now to Japan, the deep division of opinion that has granted partly paralyzed here. Once more, we shall be a united people. From the Washington Post, with a blinding flash, the true inwardness of the world crisis now stands revealed for the American people. This was never an intra-European war. It was intended from the beginning as a world war, and America was marked out as the final object of attack. On that assumption, thank heaven, all our defense plans have been prepared. From the Chicago Daily Times, an Axis power has started war against the United States. The conflagration, about which President Roosevelt in 1937 warned the Western Hemisphere, has spread to our land. A lunatic Japan, under the lash of a lunatic Germany, has commenced hostility. It is now about 6:30 in the morning in London, ladies and gentlemen. British papers are on the streets. For the reaction of the tight little aisle, we take you now to London.
Thank you, Jack Costello in New York. This is London, first day speaking. Monday morning front pages is practically given over to the new wars that Japan started on Sunday. Two wars in name only between Japan and our country, this country, and now Canada and the Dutch East Indies. Wars which really are only the expected extension of Hitler's invasion. Every available item from American forces appears in these papers. Parachutes from Japanese planes. Everything that can supplement the overriding news of the Nazi-like attack by Japan. These papers at first glance might be your papers this morning. Yours is the news they carry, all they can get of it. Stop press columns quote Japanese sources as announcing a naval battle between Japanese and British and American naval units going on now in the rest of the Pacific. They carry a message, so far unconfirmed, announcing a Japanese air attack on Singapore on the sinking of two British cruisers. And the report that the Japanese flag now flies on the United States warship Wake, taken over by the Japanese when they seized Shanghai and sank the British gunboat Peterborough. The Daily Express says that as a member of the Axis, Japan will presumably be entitled to call upon Germany and Italy to declare war upon the United States. As matters stand, it would seem that that move could be nothing but an unnecessary formality. Japan may be able to persuade Germany to go through that motion, but to date her tactics has been to strike without warning as Japan did and let it go at that. Editorially, there's virtual unanimity throughout the press. The plot is over. The war that Japan has meant in all her dealings with Britain and America over the last 2 years is open war at last. Japan's given credit for the naval power she's amassed. But, says the Express editorial, she faces the two greatest naval powers, not as we'd hoped separately, but together. Don't expect, the editorial goes on, that the early stages of the sea fighting will be easy. There will be more of this, and they're expected. For many years, the advantages of Japan's position have been fully realized by the United States. Both Britain and the United States in the past have had to prepare for the possibility of facing her sometime alone. Japan says this fighter still has the advantage of position, and it adds immensely to her naval power. They have sea sense, the Japanese. They're ruthless fighters, fooled in China, and proved Sunday, yesterday, as she started this war. In Britain, she now faces a power fully geared for war. And in America, another power fully geared at least on the industrial and naval side. American industrial strength, continues the editorial, is so vast that she could probably still supply arms to Britain and Russia. But now the United States has her own fight, and factories here must be ready to provide some of the weapons they'd expected from the United States. There are stories of Japanese embassy officials found playing bridge, not believing the report of Japan's attack. They had no news, they said. Stories of other Japanese equally surprised when reporters found them playing billiards.
an Indian commentator, broadcasting from London to his own country this morning, said in effect, "We have long known, and it's often been said, that Japan sooner or later would attack India." And he added that he was able to tell his listeners tonight that that menace to India could now be dealt with by the United States. At least that's what he told me he was going to say. The International News Service in London asked the Soviet embassy here whether, in view of the friendly relations between the three countries, Russia would accord Britain and the United States to use the bases in Siberia. The embassy spokesman said that, of course, they were watching developments with the greatest interest, but have not so far heard from their government. And therefore, at this moment, couldn't make a statement or even speculate regarding that question. Such a matter as the use of Siberian bases obviously must come direct from Moscow. About 4:30 this morning, I drove by the Japanese embassy. The square was quiet, deserted. A taxi driver used his flashlight. We were in front of number 40. The embassy is number 37. 3 doors away. He flashed it again at number 38. I said, "That's all right. Don't flash it on the embassy." He did. And on the steps in the beam stood two silent policemen. There was no one else around. Thank you, Jack Costello, again. We return you now to New York.
Thank you, Fred Bate in London. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem.
Americans, at last it has come. Whatever our individual wishes are, war has come to America. American lives have been lost. The challenge has been put up to us, and we will not be trying to accept it.
Hey, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight? And bright stars through the pale of tide, for the ramparts we wept with the glad and deep sea, and of its red trail above our living hill, it proved to our eyes that all flesh was still there. Oh,
Frank Black and Yen B. Simon Rose singing our national anthem. This is the National Broadcasting Company.